From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 11th day of July 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana, this morning. The United States Department of Agriculture at 11 a.m. Central Time released the latest world agricultural supply and demand estimates. We'll look at those. And we'll hear just a bit about what's been happening on Capitol Hill today. The House of Representatives has been taking up the farm portion of the farm bill. And it all happens during this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Let's check the numbers in Chicago as they settled up on a Thursday afternoon. July futures for the soft red winter wheat at $6.79 and a quarter were up 7 1/4 at the end of the day. The September at $6.83 up 4 cents. The hard red July in Kansas City down a half cent at $7.11 and a half. From the corn pit, a raise up 7 cents at $7.16 3/4. September at $5.60 3/4 up 7, and December at $5.27 5 1/2 higher. March corn at $5.39 1/4 up 5 3/4, and the May at $5.46 3/4 6 cents higher. And the July contract at $5.53 up 5 3/4 in the corn pit. July corn futures, or rather July soybean futures, $16.15 1/4 up 9 1/2 cents. The August at $14.72 7 1/4 higher. And September at $13.32 1/2 up 3 1/2. November beans at $12.90 3/4 up 6. And January at $12.95 5 1/2 higher. The March contract at $12.92 3/4 up 6 cents for the day. Soybean meal at $5.25.70 up 5.20. And soybean oil today at $46.49 down 49 cents. Live cattle futures in the August at $121.92 1/2 down 15 cents. Feeder cattle at $150.12 1/2 or 42 1/2 cents lower. And the July lean hogs at $102.17 1/2 are up 25 cents at this hour. In Washington, D.C. at this hour, Congress continues to debate the farm bill side of the farm bill legislation in the House of Representatives, and it appears that they are just about to have a vote. It may be by the time we get to the bottom of this half hour, when we talk with Rod Weinzierl of the Corn Growers, that we'll know the answer to that question. Let's take a look at what's been happening in the outside markets. Crude oil futures in the August contract at $104.74 a barrel, or down $1.78. RBOB gasoline at $3.03 1/10 cents, a penny and 6 cents higher. Ethanol trading at $2.46 9 cents, up 2 8 cents. And the spread between those two is 56 and 2 tenths of a cent. That's just about a penny and a tenth narrower than it was yesterday. Natural gas at 361 3/10, down 6 7/10, and diesel fuel at $2.99 6/10, just about unchanged on the day. Gold futures at $1,279.90 an ounce, up $32.50 on this Thursday afternoon. Let's check now to see what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Of course, it is a beautiful day. The winds have turned to the north-northwest at this time, and our highs will be only in the 80s, the lower 80s, in fact, and it should be dry over the next several days. The forecast says that this afternoon we'll see an 81-degree high with sunny skies on that northeast wind, actually, at 9 miles an hour. Tonight, clear and a low of 54. Tomorrow, sunny and a high of 81. East winds at 3 to 6 tomorrow, and then clear on Friday night with a low of just a 58 degrees. Saturday, sunny skies and 84. An east wind at 6 miles an hour. Saturday night, mostly clear in the area, a low of 62. And Sunday, mostly sunny and a high of 85 degrees. Sunday evening, partly cloudy and 67. On Monday, sunny skies, 87 degrees. Monday night, partly cloudy and 69. And on Tuesday of next week, partly sunny, a high of 87. Tuesday evening, a low of 69 and partly cloudy. And then on Monday, or rather Wednesday, we'll get to mostly sunny skies and a high of 87 degrees. More on the weather forecast closer to the bottom of the half hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana, is on the phone line with us. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, let's go through some of the numbers as they came out this morning from the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. They didn't do a lot to change the soybeans. The corn numbers didn't change a whole lot either. I think there was a 40 million bushel shift of some sort, one way or the other, but still we're looking at just about a 14 billion bushel crop in the coming year.
Well, that's where they're starting at anyway. I mean, they did use, they kept the yield the same. Now, some people would want to argue that based upon current crop rating levels as of last Monday, maybe that number could have been a little higher, but my guess is the rating levels are probably going to drop a point or two probably this Monday. So I think USDA just decided to just leave it where it's at, and then they used the smaller harvested acreage number that USDA plugged into the market there on the June report. And then, of course, they, you know, we did lower old crop ending stocks, so that lowered the beginning stocks. But we still end up with a fairly hefty carryover, or I mean, yeah, ending stocks level a year from September. But we've got a long ways to go before this crop is signed, sealed, and delivered. And USDA did choose to knock off 50 million, I think, off of export and 50 million off of feed usage from their previous report on the new crop balance sheet. But, you know, China's been a pretty good buyer here. They picked up 1 million tons of corn for their reserve, so they're replenishing their reserve, and they've been, you know, kind of a steady buyer here of wheat and soybeans. So maybe demand might end up being a little better than everybody thinks right at the moment anyway.
You have a good view of demand from your perch there in New Orleans. Many people think it might be better. Are you among them is the real question.
Well, I don't know how it could get I guess I don't see how the trade could plug in any worse demand numbers. I mean, and I guess that's one of the reasons why I kind of want to be a little friendly this market is because if you talk to anybody in the commercial grain trade or any of you get into the market advisories and all this kind of stuff, everybody wants to be so bearish it's terrible, and I can appreciate that point of view when you look at the balance sheet, but you know, that balance sheet is not sealed and signed, sealed, and delivered yet, and I think, you know, we've got corn acres probably too high. I think 156 bushel per acre corns might be rich, given the way this crop went into the ground. So, you know, if you look over the past years, I mean, everybody wants to use 160 bushels or better. Well, the last time we had 164 bushel per acre, we planted 10 million acres less corn. So I think with the larger acreage and the problems that we've had with flooding, creek bottom flooding, river bottom flooding, I'm not real convinced that yield is as high as what everybody wants to make it. I guess I'd be more inclined to think it's down closer to the low 150s, and we haven't really got into the pollination and the filling stages yet, which is going to be basically, you know, the last 10 days of July and basically all of August, as late as this crop is, and a lot of things can change.
Does your cyclical work fit that fundamental picture?
Yes. I want to be friendly. I think there's a reasonable chance that we could be pulling out of a four-year cycle low here. I think we're pulling out of a 45 to 50-week cycle low. So I'm inclined to kind of think this market is tracing out a summer low. And we're going to start moving sideways to higher as we go into the fall months. I mean, the pipeline is empty. harvest is going to be late. We've got a pretty tight situation to get between, you know, mid-August and October 1st before any meaningful supplies of inventory really come into the market. So, yeah, I think there's some upside in this market, much more than what anybody else really thinks. Mm,
well, December corn at 527, and what do we go down to, 4-something or other?
Yeah, we went down about 490, I think.
Yeah, 490.
We had a pretty good collapse there off of that 571 all the way down to 490, and now we're back to basically, you know, 5.25. Halfway back, you know, to that 571 levels, 530, corn futures have a tendency to find resistance at the 50% point. But if corn does break through the 50% point, then it kind of opens the gate for a much stronger recovery. I look at a weekly chart. The stochastic indicator has a bullish divergence pattern in it. And that would suggest that there's an opportunity or a shot that these corn can go on up through those 570 highs that we had. There's a kind of a triple top up there. And if we get back up into that area, I think we'll slice through that like warm butter. And it's like anything, you knock on the door long enough and the door is going to open, and the corn market has been knocking on that 570 door now 3 times. So I think if we get anywhere close up into that area, we'll go through that and then clear out a path to something around $6.
I'm going to have to take a drive out west to be convinced that the crop is not there, because it looks awful good here.
Well, now remember, I'm a technician.
I know.
And it doesn't necessarily have to come from a shorter crop.
Yeah.
Look what happened to the dollar here the last couple of days. And you can see how everybody whines and moans and groans about higher interest rates, how it was going to turn the stock market down and we were going to get into a deflation and how it was going to kill the housing industry. So Bernanke was forced basically to, you know, give the market more cocaine. I mean, the market has been living on easy money and quantitative easing and accommodation. So as soon as he says, okay, we're going to start printing money again, and the dollar weakens and commodities start firming up. So we might be in a position here, and I'm convinced that whoever replaces Bernanke is going to be way more liberal Federal Reserve Board chairman, and will probably want to print twice as much money as Bernanke. And so I think longer term that tells you that you know, the dollar could still go into a very meltdown phase, and we could have massive inflation down the road. So the weak dollar could rally commodity prices a whole lot higher than anybody thinks. I mean, we're up to $107 oil here. Now, I know a lot of that came from Egypt, but those are factors that come into play. Inflation, geopolitical forces. I mean, what would happen if the Suez Canal was shut down for a month? I got a chart formation that says crude oil could probably go back to $135, $140. I'd like to know how Bernanke's going to handle that one. But I think the dollar weakness and the addiction the market has to a weak monetary policy is going to provide probably some more excitement in the commodity markets than anybody plans on.
It's always fun to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Very well.
That's Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises. He's in Mandeville, Louisiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Just a couple of hours ago, Daryl Good came downstairs to my office in Mumford Hall, and we talked for quite some time I'll post that up on the website pretty shortly. It'll be for Commodity Week, not this week, but the following week, because I'll be in Haiti. But I did ask him about something you've been hearing about on the program several times over the last couple of weeks, and that's whether or not it might be a good time now to look at pricing out some of your 2014 corn.
My opinion is yes. Here's my concern. We're going to, if we get a 14 billion bushel crop, we push corn prices 50 cents lower than what they are right now, and that will be reflected in the 2014 price as well. What prevents us from doing that again next year, another 14 billion bushel crop, another billion bushels added to carry over, and another 50 cents lower in price. So I think there is some real downside risk on 2014 prices. The question is whether that downside risk will materialize before crop insurance prices are established in February of next year. And my concern is it will, and that we may be looking at what we would consider to be very low price guarantees on crop insurance come February of 2014. Interestingly enough, December 2014 futures are at a premium to 2013. You can sell that crop 20 to 25 cents higher than the 13 crop. I think we ought to be doing it.
Do you have a strategy for that? Are you going to do it with options, or you just hedge?
No, if you can cash flow it and manage the cash flow risk, I think hedging is a way to do it. I wouldn't approach it with options at this point. If you can't manage the cash flow, then hedge to arrive or just cash contracts would be the way to go.
That's Darrell Good, ag economist from the University of Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Dave Dickey, your director of agricultural programming, is here now. He'll take us through the agricultural news for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke said Wednesday that the U.S. economy still needs help from the Fed's low interest rate policies. Bernanke told the National Bureau of Economic Research that because unemployment remains high and inflation is below the Fed's target, the policies are still necessary. Bernanke's comments were his latest effort to stress that the Fed will continue to stimulate the economy even after it begins to slow $85 billion a month in bond purchases. Meanwhile, Federal Reserve officials seem far from a consensus on the question that's consumed investors for months. When will the Fed slow its bond purchases? Minutes of their June 18th and 19th policy meeting released Wednesday show many Fed officials thought the purchases should extend into 2014. Still, several others thought a slowdown in purchases could start soon, and one faction backed an aggressive timetable. The divisions revealed the difficulty investors have had in deciphering the Fed's intentions. The U.S. Labor Department today says that prices for goods imported into the U.S. fell for a fourth straight month in June. Overall import prices declined 0.2% from the prior month after falling a downwardly revised 0.7% in May. The moderate price declines were largely due to stronger petroleum prices, which rose 0.2%. One bright spot was export prices of farm goods. Prices for agricultural exports rose 0.6% in June and were up 9.3% on the year. Beijing analysts today say that China's wheat imports this year could surge to a 9-year high, spurred by difficult growing conditions in China and the likely impact of a record global harvest on prices. Two Chinese forecasts today suggested that imports from June of 2013 to May of 2014 will be between 4 million and 5 million metric tons, up from 2.9 million metric tons in the previous marketing year. European Union lawmakers today voted to limit the use of biofuels in the transportation sector. The EU Parliament's Environment Committee voted in favor of limiting the share of energy from biofuels in cars and trucks to 5.5% by 2020. This is a reversal from 2009 rules that said 10% of Europe's transport energy must come from renewable sources, with biofuels expected to be the bulk contributor. The whole European Parliament is expected to vote on the issue in September. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Both programs you can find on our website at willag.org. This week, our guest for the program, Commodity Week that is, will be Jim Bauer of Bauer Trading out of Lafayette, Indiana.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Now up next, if you take a drive around the countryside in the eastern Corn Belt, you'll see some pretty weedy soybean fields. It's a new phenomenon brought on by the development of herbicide-resistant plants. I'll have more on how a farmer might go about slowing the spread of glyphosate-resistant marestail. Marestail, sometimes called horseweed, can become resistant to glyphosate herbicide. It has shown up this year, more often than not, across the eastern Corn Belt in no-till soybeans. These producers have worked hard for a long time to figure out how to grow a crop without disturbing the soil. It's a very good and, dare I say, even noble pursuit. However, they and their neighbors that do till the land before planting a crop have relied too long on one herbicide to control weeds. Glyphosate is the generic name, Roundup one of the trade names. Now, marestail is no longer, in some places, controlled by glyphosate. It's usually up and growing before a soybean crop is planted, and farmers that till the soil kill it as the ground is worked. No-till acres, on the other hand, across the land can now be picked out from great distances as the narrow little plant stands and whipsaws in the wind like a horse's tail. Once that plant is 6 inches tall in a growing soybean field, there are only a few herbicides that might slow it down. At 12 inches, well, there are zero chemical options, says University of Illinois weed scientist Aaron Hager. It leaves a few limited mechanical control methods. Tear it up and start over, or use a row crop cultivator, both not options for no-tillers. Hire a soybean walking crew to weed the fields by hand. Not likely. Or Hager says, after some discussions with Ohio State Extension weed scientists that have been working with this problem for more years than Illinois, mow it off.
They've actually recommended in some cases, especially early on and after soybeans had emerged, to literally to try to mow off the tops of the marestail plants. It's not going to control the plants. They will regrow from that. But what we're trying to do, or what the objective of doing that is to try to reduce the amount of seed that these plants make.
He says marestail seeds carry easily in the wind and spread quickly.
If we don't do anything to try to control these existing marestail plants in the field, now it's not just a problem in that particular field. If these plants are allowed to make seed, it's very likely it's going to move that problem from a field to many of the fields surrounding it.
Which regrettably, in all likelihood, are already populated with glyphosate-resistant marestail controlled by conventional tillage methods. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
It's National Blueberry Muffin Day. The word muffin first appeared in Britain around the 11th century. But until the 20th century, muffins were not a marketable baked good because of their size. They grew stale too quickly. It's also St. Benedict Feast Day, patron of farm workers. On this day in agricultural history in 1792, the first issue of the Farmer's Almanac was published by Robert Bailey Thomas. The journal contained long-term weather predictions, planting schedules, astronomical tables, astrological lore, recipes, anecdotes, and other stories of rural interest. The journal has been published every year without a break to the present day. By the way, the first issue sold 3,000 copies. That number tripled in the second year of publication. And by the time of Thomas's death, sales had swelled to 250,000 copies. In 1826, John Fowler was born. Fowler, an English engineer, helped develop the Steam-Halt plow and several other specialty-use plows, including the mold drainage plow shown at the Great Exposition of 1851. Fowler died of tetanus after being thrown from a horse. And in 1987, according to the United Nations, world population hit 5 billion people. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Comes from support for WILL comes from Bates Commodities, AgriGold, The Andersons, Wisconsin Plastic Drain and Tile, Strategic Farm Marketing, and Farm Credit Services. Thanks to these businesses for their support of WILL agricultural programs.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Thursday afternoon in Washington, D.C. The House of Representatives has been taking up the farm side of the farm bill and debating that throughout the day today on a short notice. It was put into play last night. Rather thought that they might at this point be willing to take a look at what the actual numbers were for that farm bill and whether it had passed or not. But that appears not to be the case because procedural votes continue to be moved through the process. At this time, Colin Peterson is on the floor and he's speaking again. But on the phone line is Rodney Weinzierl, and he is here to take a look at Washington, D.C. with us, the executive director of the Illinois Corn Growers. Hi, Rodney. How are you?
Good, Todd. How are you doing today?
Well, I kind of thought when I was scheduled this to talk to you at 2:30 this afternoon that we would know whether a farm bill had been passed or not, and it's not at this point.
No, in fact, right now. Okay, so there was just a motion that the House Democrats had made to recommit the farm bill back to committee in their hopes of adding back the nutrition program title.
That was a procedural vote. And did it pass or not?
It failed.
It failed.
On a party line vote.
All right. So it failed on the party line vote. So now we should be back to a procedural vote, I suppose, or a vote on the farm bill as it's been put forward on the floor of the House.
Correct.
All right. And so quickly, the farm bill as it's put down on the floor of the House, what are the important parts of it that would change in law?
Okay, so making the assumption that the House here shortly passes the farm bill, and then the House farm bill and the Senate farm bill would be conferenced, and the conference bill would come back. So if we made the assumption that provisions in the House bill end up in conference committee, there are several things that are different than the Senate bill and to current law. One of the things is direct payments are eliminated, and that's true in both the Senate version of the Farm Bill and the proposed House version.
Correct.
Secondly, currently the Farm Bill has a revenue-based program called ACRE, or acronym is ACRE, and it also has a countercyclical payment.
You've got about 40 seconds, Rodney, so make it fast.
And both those programs are eliminated and replaced with new programs.
All right. And then the other thing is if it's passed as it's put forward, it would eliminate the 36 and 49 laws that always causes the farm bill to be passed.
Yes. If the House bill is what's accepted in conference committee, then what we would say is the hammer, so that Congress knows that they have to pass the farm bill again. is removed, and it becomes very threatening as to whether there'd ever be a farm bill again.
Thanks so much, Rodney. Rodney Wines-Earle is the executive director of the Illinois Corn Growers Association.